It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. And this hour, we're talking about the U.S. Patent Office ruling last month that the Washington Redskins' nickname is, quote, disparaging of Native Americans, and that the team's federal trademarks for the name must be canceled. So the question this hour, what's in a name in the context of this debate about sports teams and their use of Native American mascots, monikers, and logos? Let's get one Iowa and Native Americans' perspective. Linda Tyon is a member of the Meskwaki tribe. She lives outside of Tama on the settlement, the Meskwaki settlement there. Linda is also a retired teacher. Welcome to our program, Linda.
Good afternoon.
You, Linda, have witnessed many decades of this debate. I'm sure many changes, societal
yes,
changes
I have.
About the use of Native American terms or terms that refer to Native Americans. Before we get to this specific question about the Redskins, I wanted to have you tell us a little bit about your background so we can get your perspective on this. You grew up on a reservation.
Well, I grew up on the settlement, on the Meskwaki settlement, and our family left when I was about 10 or 11 years old. We went on a government program called relocation, and we were relocated to Chicago because other tribes were being relocated, other tribal members from somewhere else, and our tribe were also going to other cities. Some of them went to Denver, some of them went to Los Angeles, and my family went to Chicago.
Mm-hmm. And that move to Chicago took place when?
Probably in the middle 1957.
Mm-hmm. So you've had many decades to observe this.
Yes, I have.
What do you feel when you hear Washington Redskins?
I just, I don't like it. I think it's very derogatory. Native people are not red. You know, it's a color. I don't know who decided we were the color red many years ago. Somebody started it. I don't know exactly who. But, you know, Native people are of many colors.
Mm-hmm. And you think it's disparaging even though it's there promoting a football team?
I don't care what they're promoting. You know, it's not right. You know, they don't do it to other ethnic groups or other minority groups, I don't think. I'm not sure. Maybe somebody does. But the term Redskin is inappropriate. It's derogatory. And, you know, they could call themselves the Washington Senators, which has a nice ring to it. But to call it after a derogatory name called, you know, we were called, especially in early American history, Redskins, savages.
Now, you have your opinion on this. Can you tell us a little bit about the range of opinion we might find among Native Americans, among Meskwaki in Iowa, that you come in contact with? Do you think your opinion is representative of the majority?
Well, I can't really say, you know, I want to qualify this by saying I never speak for the tribe. I'm not a tribal spokesman. So back to the question, which was the people I know have expressed that Redskins is derogatory. My sons, who are real sports fans, especially of basketball, and they're, you know, in their 30s, and they don't like the term Redskin.
There are certainly a lot of other terms that are used referring to Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the term that I think often confuses people who are non-Native Americans because they don't know whether it's offensive or not, simply Indian. Is that offensive?
Not to me. I grew up being called an Indian, and I never did really think of it as offensive because, you know, my family, my mother and father, who were great influences in my life about being Meskwaki and being Native American. I don't remember them, you know, saying anything specific about being Indian, but I accepted the word Indian, and later on in school I learned what an Indian was.
Are there other areas of concern in this context that are not getting as much attention? Other words, terms that are used that fall into this basket?
I think as a woman, I have talked about the word squaw with different people because I think the word squaw is derogatory. I am not a squaw. I am a Native woman. I'm a mother. I'm a grandmother. I'm a sister. I'm a daughter. And I've noticed in early books about Native American women, you know, like in the 40s and 50s and 60s, they'll refer to a woman, a Native woman, as not a mother. You know, here comes so-and-so's mother, or here comes so-and-so's wife. It's always, one time I saw the word squaw, you know, here's the squaw who's coming in, or who there's the squaw.
Right, sure. Growing up, I remember plenty of children's books where squaw is frequently used.
Yes, it was. I think it was 1996. It's all in a children, can't remember what age group it before, but the word squaw comes up. And I was just surprised when I looked at the copyright. It said 1996. I said, oh, are they still using that word?
Mm-hmm.
Which to me is, you know, derogatory.
Linda, so when we talk about what we can or can't do with a name that refers to a Native American, where do we draw the line between being offensive and being celebratory? Because some will say Washington Redskins, that celebrates Native Americans.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's, you know, we have a long history of myth, stereotype, you know, in this country. And a lot of it, like squaw, is a stereotype. The red man is a stereotype. The savage, which is another word used to describe Indians, yeah, or Native Americans, are part of the whole mythology of America, I think, you know, the noble savage. But I think your best bet is ask the people, you know, if it was, let's say, a team in Iowa wanted to call themselves the Iowa Redskins, or the whatever town they're part of.
Warriors or Warhawks or whatever.
Yeah, I think it would be very appropriate to get together with members of the tribe and say, you know, this is what we would like to do. How do you, you know, what do you think of it? And I did the same thing when the Hispanic community came into our communities. I was confused as to whether I should say Latino, Chicano, or Hispanic. And I asked, I said, you know, which one do you want to be referred to or called? And they said, this, and I said, okay, I'll say this, you know what I mean?
Why do you think it is that Native Americans seem to have a harder time voicing their concern over this type of issue? If this was happening to African Americans, we can think of, don't have to use our imagination too much, to find a name that would be definitely offensive.
Definitely.
Why do you think that Native Americans don't come out as strongly as it would be if it was dealing with another ethnic group?
Well, number one, you think of our population. I don't know what it is now as of today, but, you know, 2 million people, and half of us are in urban areas, and the other half probably maybe more in the urban areas, and quite a few still live on reservations, which are pretty much kind of isolated communities from the dominant culture. And so for us to get up and protest and make our voice heard about Redskin and squaw, it would be difficult. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be hard to garner up enough people to protest. And they have, though. I know that students at various universities, Native American students at various universities in the past, have gotten together to protest the use of that chief that runs around and dances at the University of Illinois. And I think Dartmouth was called the Dartmouth Indians or something like that.
Oh, sure. There are plenty of sports teams out
over.
There.
Mm-hmm. Stanford University had, I think they said Stanford Indians at one point. So there were small groups that were able to protest, and I think most of them were through the universities or colleges, students protesting the use of the crazy chief Winif something, I can't remember his name, at the University of Illinois, dancing around with war paint and, they're doing the tomahawk chop. All of this is to me, derogatory things that they do, because that's not the way we are.
Linda Tyon, thank you, a member of the Meskwaki tribe, also a retired school teacher. Linda, thank you for your perspective.
Okay, thank you.
What's in a name? That's what we're talking about this half hour. We're talking about the U.S. Patent Office ruling last month that the Washington Redskins nickname is disparaging of Native Americans, and the team's federal trademarks for the name must be canceled. No more protection for these trademarks. Joining me for the remainder of the hour, Steve Baird, a trademark lawyer in Minneapolis, lives in Minneapolis but is a native Iowan. It was Baird's efforts that laid the groundwork for the current trademark decision that ruled against the Washington Redskins' name in this case. Steve Baird, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Ben. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
I want to reach out to our listeners, especially if you have a college or a high school with a mascot or a name that references Native Americans. Do you think that should change, or do you think that's okay out of a sense of tradition that you are still the Warriors or whatever you are in your community? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook. Your role goes back 25 years, I understand, Steve Baird, to when you were a law student at the University of Iowa?
That's right. I graduated from University of Iowa Law School in 1990, and during that, maybe the last year of law school and the year following that, I was working on a law review article on a sleepy section of the federal trademark statute called Section 2A of the Lanham Act. And it's the section that formed the basis for the trademark challenge that the media is reporting on now into having the Washington Redskin trademarks canceled as being disparaging to Native Americans. So it was a section of the Lanham Act that really had not been utilized much or invoked. There were, at the time I was working on that law review article back in the 1990-1991 timeframe, there had only been 12 decisions decided, and most of those were not on the disparagement prong of that section of the Lanham Act, but they were on the scandalous prong. So they dealt with more sexual content than racial content.
It must be a pretty satisfying feeling to have your work go into such a momentous decision.
Well, it was a huge investment of time. So, you know, I haven't been involved in this case for probably 15 years now. I left the case after prevailing in 1999, and then over the next decade, that previous case that was brought by Suzanne Harjo, where we had gotten basically the same result in 1999, over the course of the next decade, from 1999 to 2009, it went up and down on appeals, and it was eventually overturned on the ground that the petitioners had waited too long to bring their objections. And so that then formed the basis for a brand new case that was brought by much younger Native Americans, basically relying on the same evidence that we had put together.
What legal recourse do the Washington Redskins management have at this point, the ownership there? They could appeal.
Yes. At this point, there's two routes of appeal. One could go to the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, and that's, in fact, the Court of Appeals where I spent a year working for a federal judge right after graduating from University of Iowa. If that appeal route is taken, the record is frozen and no more evidence can come in to support either side's case. That's not the route that the team took last time, and I expect the team to take the same route that it took last time, although it'll be a slightly different turn. The other appeal route is to go to federal district court for what you call a de novo trial, and some weight will be given to the trademark office's ruling here, but there will be an opportunity for both sides to introduce new evidence for each side's case. There's been a change in the law recently that would have that go to the Eastern District of Virginia as opposed to the D.C. District Court. And so that's actually a very positive law change for those who are seeking to challenge the trademark, because I think the Eastern District of Virginia won't be controlled by the decisions that went up and down on appeal over the last decade between 1999 and 2009.
Mm-hmm. It's a decision, though, that will, by your description, bring years of perhaps litigation here. But in the meantime, it will cost the Redskins and the NFL millions in merchandise and sponsorships, wouldn't it? And revives the debate around this controversial brand and other teams. We have high schools, we have colleges, doesn't it? I mean, what are the ripple effects, the implications here?
Well, my understanding is that there have probably been, you know, 2,000 to 3,000 name changes since we filed that petition back in 1992. And so there really has been an enormous amount of awareness brought to this issue that I'm just couldn't be more happy about. And I was very touched by the remarks that Linda Tyon made a few minutes ago. And they're really...
Specifically, which remark?
Well, I think that, you know, her personal testimony and experience with the term and the labels that she applies to the Washington team's name as being inappropriate and derogatory, and that's really very consistent with, you know, the mountain of evidence that was before the trademark office, and it's consistent with the board's ruling confirming that, you know, it really is a racial slur.
Right. It's hard when you when you just make that transfer to another ethnic group and come up with a similar name. You really do have your answer, don't you?
I think you do. And you know, for anyone listening who thinks that this is, you know, a brand new issue, this is not a new issue. You know, we introduced evidence in the earlier case, and it was also relied on in this more current case. The National Congress of American Indians was speaking out on this subject in, you know, in the 60s. And we submitted an article from 1969 saying that the use of Indians as sports mascots is considered particularly dehumanizing by many Indians, the Washington Redskins among the worst offenders. And there was an individual named Harold Gross who represented a Native American group, and one of the individuals from that group was from the National Congress of American Indians. And they sat down with Edward Bennett Williams in January of, they wrote a letter in January of 1972. And then they met with Edward Bennett Williams in March of 1972. And Edward Bennett Williams describes the group that he met with, and I'm quoting, "I met with a delegation of American Indian leaders who are vigorously objecting to the continued use of the name Redskin." And then in a letter that Edward Bennett Williams sends to Pete Rozelle, the NFL commissioner at the time, he says, "Yesterday I met with a delegation of American Indian leaders who set out their position quite cogently." This is in stark contrast. Listen to the words that both of those individuals are using. They're very respectful descriptions. "The lawyers who we battled with in this case for 7 years, and I spent probably 600 to 700 hours a year working on the case from 1992 to 1999, they described the seven petitioners who we represented as seven militant American Indians. This militant group, a handful of activist American Indians, a small, vocal, unrepresentative group of American Indians." Huh. The militant petitioners. I mean, you can't. Those just are outrageous characterizations that are completely inconsistent with both the owner of the Redskins in 72 and the NFL commissioner at that time.
Okay, Steve, we've got a couple minutes left. I want to have Jim on the line. Jim, where are you calling from?
Iowa City.
Okay, Jim, what's your observation here?
Well, yeah, I've been involved with the Native Americans now for like 45 years. I'm not myself, but to me, I think the answer is simple. It's this political power. You know, it's not necessarily even population numbers compared to, say, I don't know how many Jewish people there are compared to Native Americans, but it's just political power. It's as simple as that. If there was ramifications for the Redskins, the football team, you know, with that name, I mean, they would have changed it years ago, but it's just simply, that's all there is to it. I mean, it's okay. Plain and simple.
Okay, Jim, thank you. Would you predict that the Redskins will change their name anytime soon, Steve Baird?
I think it's inevitable, and I have predicted that it'll happen at some point. It's hard to pinpoint when, but when shareholders of FedEx start, you know, asking management to address the issue, and FedEx has the naming rights to the stadium where the team plays, and with the team owner wanting to build a new stadium and probably needing federal government's help to do that at some point, I think that it's inevitable that the name changes, and so, you know, well, I think it's a matter of time.
Okay, we've got Charlotte on the line, but we don't have time to have her on. I want to just paraphrase. Where's the line is where she's asking. What is the litmus test between objectionable, disparaging, and not? She names the Cedar Rapids Warriors or the Clinton Lumber Kings. Where is the line between those?
Yeah, you know, I think that in terms of this trademark challenge, the line is there a substantial composite of those who are Native American who are offended by a particular term? A substantial composite doesn't have to be a majority. It just needs to be a significant number. And so in this particular case, the board found that there was at least 30% of the Native American population that was offended back at the time when the registrations issued, and that was more than enough to warrant cancellation.
Mm-hmm. So back to also what Linda Tyen, a Meskwaki tribe member, said early in our program when we asked her this question. She said, ask the people involved.
Right.
Okay. Thank you very much. Steve Baird is a trademark lawyer in Minneapolis, a native Iowan. Where'd you grow up, Steve?
I grew up in Iowa City.
All right.
And lived there for much of my life. Father was a professor at the University of Iowa for years.
Well, it's a pleasure having you on our program, Steve.
Thank you, Baird.
And Steve Baird's efforts laid the groundwork for the current trademark decision that ruled against the Washington Redskins name. Well, that brings us to the end of the program today. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon and Emily Woodbury. A big welcome to our new producer on our team, Claire Roth, joining our team. And our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. Get in touch with us anytime by writing to our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Tomorrow, Politics Wednesday, of course. We'll talk, of course, some more about the Hobby Lobby decision and plenty of other politics tomorrow. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.